Whoa, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, July 16th, 2025. We begin our reading this week not on the front page, but on an inside page with a story from the Paxton Buckley Lota School Board. Parents said she'll pull kids from PBL school if flawed system isn't fixed. Quote, I am disappointed that the alleged abuse was allowed to continue for nearly two decades, unquote. Paxton. The mother of two children set to attend Clara Peterson Elementary School this fall told Paxton Buckley school board members last Wednesday that she will not be sending her kids to school there if the board does not promptly correct the school district's flawed set of priorities that have become apparent in recent months, following the suspension of elementary school teacher Rob Pacey and the filing of two lawsuits alleging that he inappropriately touched students and that the administration did little about it. Paxton resident Sam Magers, a 2011 graduate of PBL High School, addressed the board for the third time in as many months, expressing disappointment by the board's lack of immediate action to address the concerns of herself and many other parents in the PBL community. I attended PBL for almost my entire schooling. I loved my time at PBL. I love Paxton just as much, Magers told the board. But right now, I feel betrayed, hurt, and a little lost. I want my children to have the same experience that I and so many other students had at PBL. I have lifelong friends and relationships that were started there. My kids have friends in these schools. But I won't be sending them here if something doesn't improve. And only you have the power to make those changes. Please show us that you can and will stand up for our students. For the third straight meeting, the board made no public comments in response to Magers. The board also took no action on Pacey's employment after meeting for more than 3 hours in closed session. A month earlier, the president of the district's teachers union, Amy Johnson, told the board that a Chicago law firm enlisted by the district to investigate claims of sexual misconduct by Pacey was nearly finished with its work, and she asked the board and the community as a whole to remain patient as the process plays out. However, no news about the investigation's progress or outcome has been made public in the weeks since. While Johnson urged the public to trust our district and its fair, transparent, and methodical approach to addressing the situation, rather than calling for decisions to be made without the benefit of a completed investigation, Magers said the continued lack of transparency has caused her to lose what faith she once had. I am disappointed that I no longer feel like this district has a handle on how to protect its students from abuse, and I am disappointed that this board and administration refuses to give any sort of statement to parents and the community in regard to the situation as a whole, Magers told the board. Magers' disappointment appears to be shared by many others in the community, some of whom voiced similar frustrations on social media last Wednesday night after Magers' statement was posted on the Ford County Chronicle's Facebook page, receiving more than 80,000 views within a matter of hours. Well said, commented Cindy Erke of Rural Roberts, a member of the Ford County Board. I hope more parents have the courage to step forward and hold these people accountable for the past as well as making improvements for the future. No child should ever have to be put through what these victims are revealing. Magers told the board that is alarming enough in itself that the allegations of inappropriate touching of students by Pacey span multiple decades. But also concerning is the apparent lack of action by administrators to address those claims which were reported by dozens of teachers, staff, students, and parents. Two lawsuits filed in recent weeks noted that the complaints against Pacey started being made not long after he was hired in 2008 as a junior high social studies and assistant junior high cross-country coach. Yet administrators repeatedly dismissed the complaints over the course of more than a decade, ignoring the school district's own policies by never notifying the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services as required. Not until this past January, when one of the alleged victims revealed her experiences with Pacey to a therapist who subsequently contacted DCFS, was the agency ever notified, the suits alleged. And, even after the district was informed of an ensuing law enforcement investigation, administrators failed to immediately discipline Pacey, who was not suspended until months later, the suits allege. These accusations did not leave administrative offices to be reported to DCFS, which is the state-mandated appropriate location for reporting these kinds of accusations, but instead were written off, Magers told the board. Larger still is the general issue of staff and teachers simply not understanding that allegations of touching, sexual assault, and even rumors of the same must be reported to DCFS. Along with that, should a staff member or teacher want to find and read the policy on reporting sexual assault or abuse, neither the PBL handbook nor the Board of Policies are very clear on what that process looks like. I've read and reread these policies and still had to talk to DCFS directly to truly understand the way that reporting is meant to go. Mager said the handling of the situation has left her disappointed. I am disappointed that the alleged abuse was allowed to continue for nearly two decades, Mager said. I am disappointed in the administrators for ignoring staff and teachers' reports and, in turn, letting our children down. Student education, and especially student safety, should be this board's number one priority. We shouldn't have to worry that our children are going to be disregarded and written off if they tell a staff member that something is wrong. We shouldn't have to worry that our children can't trust a coach or teacher. We shouldn't have to worry that our kids are being abused at school. These systems are put in place for a reason, but clearly something in ours is flawed. So what does this board plan to do to make 100% certain that this does not happen again in the future? How will policies be adapted to make sure that our children are safe and stay safe? How do we move forward from this and do our best to make sure that something like this never, ever happens again to another student? Finally, how does this board intend on proving to district families that we can continue to have trust and faith in you? Magers made similar comments to the board both in May and June while urging the board to hold administrators accountable for not promptly suspending Pacey and notifying DCFS. In between those meetings, a lawsuit was filed on June 6th in Ford County Circuit Court on behalf of three one-time PBL students who claimed Pacey inappropriately touched them. A second lawsuit was filed a month later on behalf of a fourth alleged victim. Both civil complaints were filed by Chicago attorney Bhavani Ravidran and named the same five defendants: Pacey, the Paxton Buckley Lota School District, former superintendents Travis Dooley and Cliff McClure, and PBL junior high school principal Josh Didier. A status hearing on both lawsuits is set for 10 a.m. Thursday, September 11th. Speaking out about childhood abuse requires an incredible amount of courage, Ravindran said recently. Our clients are shedding light on their experiences to protect as many PBL students as they can. Meanwhile, Pacey has not been criminally charged or arrested and remains on paid administrative leave. Pacey, a STEM and technology teacher at Clara Peterson Elementary School and former head PBL junior high school cross country and girls track coach, has denied any wrongdoing. The school board's next regularly scheduled monthly meeting is 6 p.m. Wednesday, August 13th in the boardroom in the administrative office in Paxton. It is open to the public. And in the other teacher abuse claims case that we've been following, ex-teacher coach waives preliminary hearing. Robbie Dinkins, 38, to appear in Ford County Circuit Court for pretrial hearing in early October. Paxton. A former Gibson City Melvin Sibley coach and teacher charged with 6 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse for alleged sexual activities with a high school student waived his right to a preliminary hearing in Ford County Circuit Court on Wednesday, July 9. Robert L. Robbie Dinkins, 38, of Gibson City, appeared before Livingston County Judge Mary Cole, who was reassigned the case last month, with his two private attorneys and a special prosecutor, Kate Kurtz, attending remotely via Zoom. Cole set a pretrial hearing for 9:30 a.m. Wednesday, October 8. In the meantime, Dinkins was ordered to have no communication via letter or otherwise with any minors. Dinkins, a 13-year employee of the GCMS school district who was fired in April from his position as an 8th-grade math teacher and coach of the 8th-grade boys basketball and boys track teams and GCMS Fisher's varsity soccer team, was arrested on a Ford County warrant on June 5th in Macon, Georgia, and later transported from the Bibb County Jail in Georgia to the Ford County Jail in Paxton. On June 23rd, Dinkins was ordered detained through trial. Gibson City Police Chief Adam Rosendahl said in a June news release that an investigation revealed there, quote, there was data to support Mr. Dinkins having participated in sexual activities with a high school age student, unquote. According to a statement of charges against Dinkins, that resulted from GCMS's initial third-party investigation into his conduct and led to his April 23rd firing, Dinkins maintained inappropriate relationships with students and repeatedly crossed the boundaries between employee-student to such an extent that the parents of the student perceived his actions as the grooming of these children for sexual abuse. That included claims that Dinkins spent time with students one-on-one, both at school and at his home, and communicated with them via text outside of the school day, sometimes about his own or their own personal matters. Dinkins was placed on paid administrative leave on April 4th, 5 days after the probe into his conduct began. On March 30th, Gibson City Police met with concerned parents of a GCMS student who claimed that their child had been receiving concerning text messages from Dinkins. Police later executed a search warrant at Dinkins' residence, where they seized his phone and other electronics for forensic analysis. In May, Dinkins declined to comment to the Chronicle about the allegations against him. Now something from the Ford County Sheriff's Office. Sheriff's Office, be on alert for scam. Paxton. The Ford County Sheriff's Office is alerting the community about a recent scam targeting a Ford County resident. According to the Sheriff's Office, a resident recently received a call from someone claiming to be a federal agent, complete with a fake badge number and a caller ID that appeared legitimate. The caller told the victim they had an arrest warrant for various crimes, but suggested that the issue could be due to identity theft. To resolve it, the caller demanded $10,000 in Bitcoin to be sent to the Internal Revenue for a new Social Security number. The scammer instructed the victim how to withdraw cash from their bank without raising suspicion and directed them to deposit the money into a Bitcoin ATM using a QR code linked to the scammer's crypto wallet. The caller also insisted that the matter was confidential, discouraging the victim from contacting local law enforcement to verify the claims. While this scam may seem obvious when written out, the scammer's use of detailed information, fake credentials, and high-pressure tactics can be convincing and intimidating, said a news release. If you receive a call claiming you have an arrest warrant or need to pay to resolve a legal issue, do not share personal information or financial information. Hang up and contact your local law enforcement agency to verify the call's legitimacy. Be cautious of anyone pressuring you to act quickly or demanding payment in Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies. A warning well needed. Now we have something from the Elliott Village Board. With Water Tower Project, new tornado siren possible. Siren is currently located atop Elliott's existing tower. Elliott. While receiving an update on the construction of a new water tower and treatment plant on Tuesday, July 8, village trustees learned they could be looking at an expense for a new tornado siren, too. Project manager Seth Flash, an engineer with Milano and Grunlow Engineers, said work on the slab for the new water treatment plant will be done in early August. And the footing for the new water tower is expected by September 1st, with pieces of the tower's metal fabrication beginning to be delivered by October 1st. Resident Bill Smith, who was also chief of the Elliott Fire Protection District, asked Flatch if the tornado siren or the power to it would be disturbed with the new construction. The current siren is atop the existing water tower, and those present were not certain of where the power to run it is located. Smith said the current siren can be activated from inside the fire department or inside the village hall. Flatch admitted that the siren status had not yet been considered and thanked Smith for bringing it to his attention. Flatch said he was not aware of any plans to demolish the existing brick building where the power may be, and he promised to follow through with plans for relocating the current siren and providing a new power source if needed. Some discussion followed about newer types of replacement sirens that can be activated remotely from a phone app or possibly by the Ford County Emergency Management Agency. You have to have one, Smith said, emphasizing that neither the existing power nor the existing siren can be taken away before a new system is put in place. Also during the Village Board July 8th meeting, trustees agreed that to no longer use contract labor by resident David Hudson. Hudson has been providing mowing, snow removal, and utility locator services in addition to repairing culverts as requested. The board had previously approved set fees for each area of his work when it agreed to use his services. Hudson was selected to do the village work after advertisements or solicitations for village work produced no other offers. Village President Josh Rowley refused to notify Hudson of the board's action to quit using his services. I'm not touching that one with a 10-foot pole, Rowley said. The village now intends to use only Rick Bowen for village maintenance and other services. Bowen was officially approved as a village employee at the board's June 10th meeting. At the July 8th meeting, trustees unanimously agreed that a $25 per hour wage is now the official wage to be paid to Bowen. The wage was agreed to several months earlier when Bowen first made a proposal but was not initially hired. An agenda item called for changing the amount of money that the village president can spend without board approval. Rowley said he believes the current limit was set at $200 and then added, "But you can change it to zero and make me a happy man." Trustee Jack Hubbard then immediately moved to set the amount at zero, and the motion was approved unanimously. In a bid opening during the meeting, officials learned that only one bid was received to supply material for a planned roadway maintenance. The total material cost will be $13,384 from C7C Farms and Trucking, LLC of Loda. Money will be taken from the motor fuel tax revenue since the project has been approved by the Illinois Department of Transportation. Also, the amount of $995 was approved in cost sharing for the sidewalk in front of Jimmy Olivero's house. The contractor will be Ike Brothers LLC, according to paperwork submitted by Olivero. During the consideration of bills submitted for payment, Trustee Mary Young asked why there was a $218 expense listed for office furniture. Village Clerk Gloria Lynch said the expense was for tables that she said need to be used to reorient the board so that trustees face their constituents as required. Trustees currently face each other. Some trustees felt the seating change and related expense were unnecessary. As tempers began to flare in exchanges between board members and Lynch, Rowley suggested pausing the idea and perhaps considering it in the future. "We don't need this petty business right now," Rowley said. In the meantime, Lynch would need to be reimbursed if the tables are kept, and the amount was approved as part of the bills. Hubbard voted no. During discussions, Lynch admonished board members who she believes may be violating the Illinois Open Meetings Act by getting together to discuss village business outside an official meeting. Lynch strongly stated that such action would be illegal. Hubbard responded loudly that he was well aware of the rules and was not doing what Lynch suggested. The two then traded sharp words for a short period. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, July 16th. Deborah L. Couch, Cisna Park. Deborah Lynn Couch, 66, of Cisna Park, died Thursday, July 10th at her home. Funeral services were held Saturday, July 19th at the Cox Knapp Funeral Home in Paxton. Burial followed at Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Memorials may be made to the Susan G. Coleman Breast Cancer Foundation. John S. Cummins, or Cummins, C-U-M-M-I-N-S, Gibson City. John S. Cummins, 85, of Gibson City, died at 6:26 p.m. Wednesday, July 9th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana, surrounded by family. Funeral services were held Tuesday, July 15th at the Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City, followed by burial at Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City with military rites. Memorial contributions may be made to the Lee Lowry American Legion Post, the Shriners Hospitals for Children, or the GCMS Booster Club. Paul H. Cytlak, and that is spelled C-Y-T-L-A-K, Paxton. Paul H. Cytlak, 53, of Paxton, died Wednesday, July 9th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Cremation rites were accorded. A celebration of his life will be from noon to 4 p.m., Sunday, July 20th, at the Cadillac on State Street in Paxton. Carolyn K. Finnis, Gibson City. Carolyn Catherine Finnis, 81, of Gibson City, formerly of Bellflower, died Monday, July 7th at Gibson City Area Hospital in Gibson City with family at her side. Funeral services were held Sunday, July 13th at the Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City and burial at the Bellflower Township Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. John C. Frank, Gibson City. John C. Charlie Frank, 61, of Gibson City, died at 11:40 a.m. Monday, July 7th at Gibson Area Hospital in Gibson City. A graveside service was held Monday, July 14th at the Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. John C. Goldenstein, Danforth. John C. Goldenstein, 94, of Danforth, died Sunday, July 6th at Riverside Medical Center in Kankakee. Funeral services were held Thursday, July 10th at the St. John's Lutheran Church in Danforth, with the Reverends Tim Hammond and Ron Rasmussen officiating. Burial followed in the Danforth Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Prairie View Lutheran Home in Danforth or St. John's Lutheran Church in Danforth. Dennis W. Harry, Rankin. Dennis W. Harry, 84, of Rankin, died Thursday, July 10th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services were held Thursday, July 17th at the Knapp Funeral Home in Cisna Park, with the Reverend Charlie Growell officiating. Burial followed at Rankin Union Cemetery in Rankin with graveside military rites provided by the Cisna Park American Legion Post. In lieu of flowers, memorials in his name may be made to a charity of the donor's choice. Mary E. Holverson. Rantoul. Mary Ellen Holverson, 78, of Rantoul, mother of a Paxton resident, died at 4:39 p.m. Sunday, July 6th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of her life will be held Saturday, August 2nd at the Harvest Church in Urbana. Memorials may be made to the Harvest Church of Urbana. Paula Kouvelas, and that's spelled K-U-V-E-L-A-S, Paxton. Paula Kouvelas, 72, of New Harmony, Indiana, formerly of Paxton, died unexpectedly in the early morning of Tuesday, June 17. Services will be Saturday, July 26th at Lux Chapel in Rantoul, preceded by visitation starting at 10 a.m. The service will be officiated by the Reverend Brett Smith. Burial will follow in the Ludlow Cemetery. Linda L. Longest, Milford. Linda L. Longest, 81, of Milford, died Friday, July 4th at her residence. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon, Saturday, July 26th at the Knapp Funeral Home in Milford, followed by at noon by a funeral service officiated by the Reverend Brent Zastro. Burial will be at a later date. Memorials may be made to the Milford Ambulance Service, Crossroads Youth Center, or the Illinois Memorial Hospice. Larry S. Roach, Normal. Larry S. Roach, 76, of Normal, stepfather of a Paxton resident, died Sunday, July 6th at Carl Broman Medical Center in Normal. A celebration of life service will be at 3 p.m. Sunday, August 10th at the Calvert and Metzler Memorial Home in Bloomington, with the Reverend Trey Haddon officiating. Military rights will be accorded by the Bloomington Normal American Legion's Post Honor Guard. Interment will follow the service at East Lawn Memorial Gardens. Visitation will be from 1 to 3 p.m. Sunday, August 10th at the funeral home. The family suggests memorials be made to Ruby's Rescue and Retreat in McLean. Thomas P. Stuckey, or Stuckey, it's spelled S-T-U-C-K-E-Y, in Gibson City. Thomas Paul Stuckey, 70, of Gibson City, died Wednesday, July 9th at his home, surrounded by family and friends. Funeral services will be held at 3 p.m. Friday, July 18th at the Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City. Memorial contributions may be made to Shepherd's Closet in Gibson City or the IU Health Pulmonary Department. And we'll return to the news on a positive note from the Paxton Park District. Save the Pool Committee disbands, leaving a $41,000 parting gift. Paxton. The Save the Paxton Pool Committee has disbanded and donated its nearly $41,000 in remaining funds to the Paxton Park District, the District Boards of Commissioners learned during its monthly meeting, Tuesday, July 8th. The committee, which raised funds to save the public swimming pool at Cody Park from closure on multiple occasions in recent years, left a check totaling $40,912 as a parting gift, reflecting the remaining funds raised by the committee. The funds have been earmarked towards the longevity of the pool. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.